You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
TMZ, oh my goodness.
I mean, what are we doing here?
I think he's the philosopher of football.
It's great that everyone can give their opinion.
Absolutely ridiculous.
Find me. Find me. I don't care anymore. So drain my bank account.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental from the AT&T MLS studios in Midtown Manhattan. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer. Charlie Davies is here wearing a nice blush sweater here, Charlie. This is soft.
Why, thank you.
Yeah, channeling my inner Bobby Warshaw here. I won't touch you, Dave.
Yeah, please don't.
Thanks for being here.
Oh, yeah,
here,
Doyle's on my left.
Yeah, David
That's
Goss.
What that smell is.
Matt Doyle. Wow. Wow. We're in a good mood today. We've had a little bit of a rip-roaring debate going on before this about any number of things. Maybe
there
we'll get those on the show.
Multiple haters on this panel right now. I don't know why I called it a panel.
Yeah, I don't know why either.
Yeah.
Doyle's not among them?
No, Doyle doesn't troll, right?
Right. Correct.
He's pulling his Bobby right now.
He is. All right, look, we're going to talk about MLS Week 10. That's what we do on Mondays. We just talk soccer, and let's just get going. Winner for the weekend that was. Charlie, what do you got? Who won?
There were some great winners. I'm going to have to go with Barco. Ezequiel Barco for Atlanta United.
One goal, one assist. Like a .3 assists on the shot that was pushed back into Joseph Martinez's path.
But when you look at how he played last year and his influence last year and going through some tough times in the locker room last year, now this year he comes in as a substitute on April 13th against the Revs in the first half due to an injury to Remedy, scores two goals, and then you start seeing him play more, 90 minutes, 83 minutes, 90 minutes, and now he looks like he's the player that they were hoping to get. He looks fit. I think last year, if you watched him play, he struggled to get around the pitch. He struggled to have an identity on the field. Now this year, he looks comfortable. And he looks like the guys look like they can trust in him. They believe in him. And it's always great to see when a player has success.
It's not just Barco that's the winner here. It's Atlanta United. 3-0 in Kansas City. What, 15, 16 players available for Peter Vermes in this one? Missing a bunch of starters. He says, we just got to figure
it
out.
Charlie, did you get the call? Did Casey try and pick you up for the weekend?
No, Hurtado. I mean, Hurtado gets injured. Charlie Davies is the first call, yeah? I mean,
I think there's a couple of teams that could use my service.
How many minutes you got in your right?
Yeah, yeah. I probably got if a team called me was like, I need you to play this weekend and I need an honest assessment of how long you could give me, I think I would tell them I could give you a solid 15 minutes.
15.
Right. Wow.
Yeah.
If they play the ball only directly to your feet, can you get 20?
Right, maybe not in behind.
Like, you don't have to run ever into a channel.
How many channel runs?
Just get into the box.
Yeah.
Channel runs, see that? Then we're pushing it.
Right.
If you need me to get into the channels, we're talking 10 minutes.
Okay, go down to 10 minutes. Barco's good, though. He's making recovery runs late in the game to cut off Sporting Kansas City players. He's really the only player last night, Matt, where I thought, wow, he's direct. He has an idea in the final third.
Which is big.
He's going to goal.
But we've talked about it a lot. That's been his biggest problem. It's just, well, okay, maybe one of a few.
Yeah,
but
there's been a couple.
He's never been goal dangerous. He's never been aggressive. It's always been, I'll beat a guy or two, but I'm just connecting play, which is what Nagby does and what Remedy does sometimes and what Laurentowicz does. And Now you see, like, just taking the shot for Joseph's goal was, like, a victory.
Yeah.
Atlanta United.
Yeah, and then I think his confidence has grown based upon having that strong performance in New England. And he had, I think, one or two good games in CCL as well. So, like, it's been sporadic, but it's the sporadic part is happening a little more, with a little more regularity. He was really good. Like, he looked the part. I still have some questions about what his best position is. Does he pass well enough to be a playmaker? Because he's still not a chance creator in that sense. He does the Nagby thing, right? He'll beat two guys, and he'll have the defense backpedaling, then rather than, you know, hit the killer pass, he just kind of lays it off. And that creates shots, but it doesn't create the types of chances that you want to see from a $15 million player. But, like, he's got a cannon, and he's got breakaway speed, and he's putting those two things together. And you could see why he got called in for the Argentina U-20s.
Yeah, he's going to be of real use for the Argentina U-20s at the World Cup. He's gone. He left this morning, Monday.
Mm-hmm. Yay for Atlanta.
The squad. So, like, my question is this. If you could have chosen as Frank DeBoer for Ezequiel Barco to have that match, or for Pity Martinez to have that match, what would you have chosen? I get that they're happy. It's a $15 million player that they brought in last year, and now he's starting to come good. 4 goals, 1 assist so far. Still on board for the 20 goals assist guarantee that I made. But, I mean, I think you would have taken it from Pity, because still another game without the box score production from Pity and an early exit. I think you would have swapped him. Take the result, but, I mean, at some point, Pity's got to have a coming out moment.
Yeah, but the way the season's gone, they'll take anything right now.
Whatever comes?
Yeah. I mean, if a player on your team plays well and you win for Atlanta United, the way 2019 is gone, that's all they care.
They've won 3 of 4. The question is, how real is that? Because New England, Colorado, and a Sporting Kansas City team who are just terrible right now. I understand winning at Sporting KC is always nice in its way. This team is winless in 7. They've given up 24 goals in their last 7 games. You can only beat the teams in front of you, and they've mostly done that. But even in the stretch, the only really good team they've played is FC Dallas, and they did not win that game. So, things are better than they were a month ago for Atlanta United. I'm not sold.
But that's all part of the process, right? Is catching teams at the right time. When teams are missing players due to injury or suspension, and your team's fully fit, or you're playing a team that's not so great, but you guys you have injuries and your team can still cope because you're playing a bad team or a team that's low on confidence. So throughout these victories, it's only going to help strengthen this locker room and get guys in form. So you might not think these victories are important, but any win is good for a locker room because winning solves a lot of problems.
What about the possession play? We talked about this game being two teams that wanted to do similar things. There's still a sort of, are you bought in? Are you not bought in? Are Atlanta bought in? Are the results coming because of this system shift by Frank DeBoer or in spite of it? I mean, I know they got 3 goals last night, but it wasn't always, it wasn't always flowing. It wasn't always like the high volume chance creation, the big chance creation that we've been accustomed to seeing.
I think what I saw in particular is in the second half, there was a play where Atlanta could have broke out and they were on a counterattack. But instead of pushing, Justin Martinez came back, took a touch and played backwards and was like, calm down, let's keep the possession. And I thought, wow, that's quite different from last year where as soon as that break happens, Joseph Martinez is on the back shoulder of the center back and he's looking to get behind or he's already in an offside position because he knows Almiron's just going to break through the wing and then by the time he crosses it, he'll be onside. So for me to see Joseph Martinez take that step and say, you know what, this is a time where DeBoer wants us to keep the ball, wants us to keep possession. Let's slow down the game. Let's dictate the tempo. I thought that was a huge step forward for the team in kind of figuring out the identity of Atlanta and I going forward, that we want to change the way we play.
With results come belief, a big win for Atlanta, 3-0 for them in this one. Other winners, anybody out there?
I'll say Jim Curtin. And it's part and parcel of what the Union did this week. And granted, they had an easy schedule this week. They had 2 home games that they should have won. It did come after a road game last weekend all the way in Vancouver. So you could have had dead legs, and then you add injuries on top of that. They're doing this without Marco Fabian, and they only got Sergio Santos back for the second half in the New England game. Brendan Aaronson goes off injured. Mark McKenzie's been missing basically all year through loss of form, and then, you know, an appendectomy. He had to play his backup left back for the first game this week, the 2-0 against FC Cincinnati. You know, he had to mix and match at right back, and Baizo gave him good 90 minutes. On and on and on and on. They've just adopted this next man up philosophy for the Philadelphia Union. And it's not just having a better roster. It's having a deeper bag of tricks in terms of how they play. And you see it in terms like they want to be more of a pressing team this year, not just possession. They are more of a pressing team. They create goals off of that. However, they've also shown against Montreal when they need to still be a possession team that knocks the ball around and pulls apart a bunker, they can do that as well. And then, okay, we're going to be a 4-4-2 diamond team. Well, they were in the first 35 minutes against the Revolution. But they've also played a 4-2-3-1. They've also played a 4-3-3. And then in the last about hour against the Revs, when Elsinho came on, they went to a flat midfield 4 to stretch the Revs out because the Revs had actually been playing pretty good for the first half hour. So Curtin, every year for the last 5 years, we've come into, and you know, we tend to do this off the air. It's like, well, okay, which coaches are on the hottest seat? And like every year for the last 5 years, Jim Curtin has been like 1, 2, or 3 on this list. And they started off 0-2-1 this year. And we're like, oh man, I think this is going to be it for Jim. And they've been one of the 2 or 3 best teams in the league since then, despite missing so many games to injuries, suspensions, on down the list. They're top of the East.
20 points.
I hope that Jim Curtin just has us at the top of his DL
yeah.
or podcast. This is the second straight show he's getting the love from ETR. Uh-huh. If I could get that emotional boost every like once a week
Bobby
where I just Warshaw's throw on a podcast.
He's getting shout-outs. Where's our shout-outs?
Susanna gave him the love on Thursday. Doyle on Monday.
We got the mail on this one.
What up, Jim?
Anonymous. Please, give us your names. That makes it a lot better here. The Union are fun to watch, all caps. I've been waiting my whole life. 11
I think
players.
We received that about 3 minutes after they went up
6-1. The Union were fun. Were a lot of fun last year. I actually think in some ways they were more fun last year just because they were that flowing possession style come hell or high water. I mean, they just scored 8 goals in 2 games. That's also
yeah, that's fun.
A lot of
11
fun.
11 players have scored goals. David Akam has 4. Kasper Schabilko has 3. Ilsenio has 2. Burke has 2.
Well done with the Schabilko.
Uh-huh. Santos has 2. Bedoya has 2. Fabian has 2. Montero has 1. Elliott has 1, which, by the way, was like Peter Crouch-esque banger. 2-foot, take it down, spin, knock it home. That man is not a center back. Picot, Aronson. I mean, they're spreading
was
the wealth.
Was Peter Crouch the like great center forward that Weeby just went with?
Well,
but, I mean,
because
it's a lengthy.
He's gangly.
Similar look.
Got it, for sure.
Because I was like, is that the dude I want to be compared to
I mean,
in a good moment?
I can see Peter Kraft scoring that goal, though. You know, like
hey,
the
he's
leg
English
flies
too.
Up and it's clickety-clacking and it brings it down. And,
well,
yeah,
I just like that one.
I like that one. But look, yeah, they've lost one time in their last 9 games.
Charlie, you played for Jim Curtin.
Yep.
He's come a long way.
He has come a long way. I think Jim's biggest asset is his ability to be the nicest guy on earth because he literally is such a nice, genuine guy. At sometimes, you guys are like, I need you to have a little bit more fire and be angry sometimes, and that's just not in Jim's DNA. But fortunately for Jim right now, Bedoya and Harris Mjungjanen are 2 guys in the locker room that can hold everyone accountable and everybody respects. And they do all the yelling. They are the guys that yell at guys, get guys motivated. And so as a coach, it's perfect because he's had this roster for a long time to shape, mold, have guys in, have guys out, and they're all bought into it. And this is a group that is together. When they score goals, you can see these guys all like each other. They all like the direction that this team is going.
Yeah, the celebrations were there. By the way, there was also a celebration to honor Corey Burke because he's going to be stuck in Jamaica for 3 months, it sounds like. Going to miss the Gold Cup, going to miss the stretch run here in the summer with the Philadelphia Union because he has visa issues. There are some,
which is very ambiguous.
Yeah, there are some rumors going around about what those might be. It's a legal issue. I don't personally feel comfortable commenting when I don't know what it is, but there are a lot of people that you could go read and see what those rumors are. Corey Burke's been really good, though. Schabilko's been pretty good, too.
Well, you saw after they scored this weekend, they had
the guys brought out the jersey
for Corey Burke. That's also pretty cool to see.
Yep. But Schabilko's filled in for what he brings, not as fast, but when you watch him, he moves quite oddly, but he seems to understand how to like pull defenders around and help the rest of his teammates.
Yeah.
And he's finished the chances he's got, which as striker coming in new, that's what you want to see just to get confidence from the rest of your team being like, if we work hard for this guy, he will reward us.
Well, there were questions about where the goals would come from, and that's why I went and looked, and 11 players have scored them. Like, last year, that was the question. You know, the years with CJ Sapong, you had the 1 year, then it was down. Who was going to be the guy that scores the goals? Well, they're getting it from all comers.
I still think it's a question. They've done a good job of spreading the love, but I think in order to be a top team in the conference, you need to have... you know, you need to have a guy who steps up and is like, I'm the 15 goal scorer.
It could be a comp.
It could be.
Of all of the names we're talking about, he's the most likely one, and obviously last
year. Ilsenio?
Yeah. No, it's not Ilsenio.
They're winning games like this. Bring him on.
That's not Ilsenio.
If they win 6-1 every week.
They went out and they got Sergio Santos to be that guy. That's why they brought him in. He was one of their, if not their biggest offseason signing. And the other couple that
Marco Fabian's.
Well, yeah, it's fair.
Yeah.
But like, I meant up top.
Yeah.
But like, his ability to sort of do a little bit of everything in the final third, I think they're expecting him to be like that 15 to 18 goal number 9, where Fabian ends up playing a little more recessed in the pure playmaker role. And we have the fact that they're, again, we're quarter of the way third of the way through the year, and we've barely seen this team's first 11 play, and here they are, top the East.
Congratulations to the Union. It's going pretty well right now. Other winners here?
Don't be haters. Don't be a hater.
Here he comes.
That was like the worst Doyle's life.
Doyle's okay. Doyle's safe. Good job, Doyle. Obviously, Derek Etienne with a huge goal to beat the LA Galaxy for the New York Red Bulls at Red Bull Arena in front of Cam Wiebe. Clearly his favorite player ever now, because it's the first game winner he's ever seen.
Exactly. You know what? I don't want to like jinx it or anything like that, but the Red Bulls should probably have us out to more games.
Yeah, potentially.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, that's true.
It's like his heaven.
Cam Wiebe's 1-0-0.
You've got planes landing at Newark, so about every 4 minutes... The little guy is extremely engaged the rest of the time. He just stared at the field and yelled, ball, ball, ball. And so, you know, he's picking it up really quickly.
I mean, that's better than a lot of youth soccer coaches.
Ay, ay, ay.
I go see my nephew play. Whoa. Oh, my God. This stuff those parents say. Unreal.
Doyle's just posted up in the corner just like.
Send it.
There's no pressure in the right channel.
Just yell, send it.
I haven't heard that one in a long time.
Game.
I'm more partial to boot it. I think boot it. Like send it has some nuance. Boot it, I feel, is a little bit more just brute. I mean, first 15 minutes, we're back to the Red Bulls of old. They were pressing, doing their thing.
Yeah.
They didn't have BWP. They didn't have Kaku, of course, for suspension.
And
it was a big win.
Then they had zero pressure up top, and Diego Polenta is arguably the best passer in Major League Soccer as of right now. That outside of the foot through ball for the first goal?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I said, whoa, this guy's a defender?
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, he was just hanging out riding horses for 6 months. Because he was like, I think this might be it for me. I don't think I'm going to play soccer anymore. I think I'd rather just ride horses and hang with my family.
He may have been Uncle Rico, though, and just had like the tire swing out in Argentina, just banging balls from like 55 yards out,
outside
curling them through. What?
He's Uruguayan.
Yeah, I thought he played in Argentina.
He did, but he's Uruguayan.
Sorry. Yeah. My apologies.
Uruguay.
Yeah, he's not allowed to go to Argentina.
Yeah, he's a horse guy.
But yeah, so then Dabgod comes off the bench and obviously scores the game winner for New York Red Bulls.
Tyler Adams was all about it. You saw he pushed it out on social media.
Yeah?
Yeah, those two.
They're all homies. The whole little group is all into it. So that was cool. Brian White was in an offside position, not affecting the play during the goal.
That's one way of putting it.
And
I don't know if I agree with that. I kind of think that was – I think he affected the goalkeeper. I get that he wasn't directly blocking the line of sight.
Who was directly blocking? Rolf Fleischer.
Fletcher.
So what does it matter?
Just everyone be quiet and let him.
Rolf Fletcher.
I mean, I would have had
to earn Weeby and me.
You threw us off. You threw us off.
Either way, that's not a convincing win for me to see Red Bull and say, oh, they're back on it. But that's a win that helps that locker room and brings guys together.
Also a huge moment. Omer Fernandez came off the bench and looked really good.
I agree.
Kaku's out, so you need someone to bring some creativity. Yeah, it is a trend because he's good. And he also fills it. He normally comes on for Mwiel, and there's a clear difference in how they play the game. Is that a fair way to put that?
I think that's pretty fair.
Okay.
Yeah. Congratulations to the Red Side in New York. Derek Etienne, big goal for them. 3-2 win. It was a really nice day. Fun time at Red Bull Arena. I'm going to go Blue Side of New York for the winner here. We were bagging on them early in the season. Domi Tarrant doesn't know what he's doing. He doesn't have this thing figured out. He's making too many changes. He's still making some changes. That's still happening. But they go to Montreal, get a 2-0 win. They've lost just once. That's the fewest in the Eastern Conference. Now they do have 6 draws, which is the most in Major League Soccer. So they have some wasted opportunities there. But Hébert looks good.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was easy to doubt that signing, I think, because sometimes, you know, you look at TAM moves or DP moves in this league and it's like, you know, coming from Croatia or Slovenia or smaller leagues, you don't know how it's going to work. Sometimes it does. And in this case, it really looks like it's working. So congratulations.
I mean, the City Football Group have that scouting apparatus that is probably the most robust in the world. And NYCFC can take advantage of it with signings like Hébert. And if you look at their signings over the last 3 years, nobody knew Alex Rigan was going to be this good. Anton Tinnerholm, really good player, came from Scandinavia. Most players who come from Scandinavia to MLS these days fail.
And a lot of those Malmo players that came with him did not stick.
Correct. And it goes on down the list. So they're like, give credit to City Football Group's scouting apparatus and give credit to Hébert and to Dome, because he said he still makes some changes, but not a lot. It's not like it was from, you know, August of last year up until, you know, basically April 15th of this year.
Why do you think that the Swedish Scandinavian player that comes to MLS traditionally doesn't do well?
Well, I think traditionally up until the last couple of years they had. I think just MLS is a better, faster, more physical league than it was, you know, even in 2015 and 16.
Yeah.
It's the TAM era. The league has changed. NYCFC now have taken 10 of the last 12 points, you know, 3 wins and a draw in their last 4 games. It's not a coincidence that Hebert has started each of those 4 games. You know, he didn't get on the scoreboard this time. But he just affects the game with his movement. If you look at everything that NYCFC do, he's out ahead of the play, making diagonal runs across the center backs to open up space underneath. And when you have players like DeJuri Shradi and Maxi Morales, who's still so good, you know, and even Tate Castellanos has come into his own over the past month as well. When you have players like that, you're going to score some goals. And that's the story right now.
By the way, they would have 5 straight wins if not for a 90 deflection and Sean John redirecting the ball into his own net in Minnesota. So, look, there's been some, you want to call it bad luck, you want to call it, you know, moments of losing focus, whatever it might be. NYCFC starting to have some shiny bright points here. It's time for losers, and I'm going to make a rule. You cannot take either the Colorado Rapids, because they have yet to win a game, and that remains the same after losing 3-2 at home on Friday to Vancouver Whitecaps. The bench, after that game-winning goal by Andy Rose, logically made Doyle's face of the week. Jack Price getting up, sitting back down, like raking his hands through his hair, was basically a summation of the season so far for the Rapids. You can't take them, and you definitely cannot take the New England Revolution after a 6-1 loss to Philly. So I'm going to take...
there's 24 teams in Major League Soccer. Almost half of them win every week, and you're going to eliminate the two.
I am. You can find somebody. Get creative here. I'm going to go with Ted Uncle. Referee Ted Uncle. He was the target of Caleb Porter's rant after a 3-1 loss for the Crew in D.C. He had a tough week last week. We know that. You might have been paying attention. Christian Roldan's red card rescinded. That issue at the end of the game where there's a penalty call, but it's clearly outside the box, and it goes to video review. Uncle wasn't happy. You could see on the broadcast about that one. And obviously Caleb Porter was not happy about Pedro Santos' goal being taken off the board. This was the opener until it was not. Basically, to summarize what happened here, there's a ball in the midfield. Ted Uncle comes steaming in. Lucho Costa comes steaming in. Will Trapp comes steaming in. They all meet in one spot. Lucho goes down. Off goes Will Trapp. He connects the pass to Pedro Santos. Pedro Santos scores a goal. They go to video review. They say that's a foul. We see contact there on Will Trapp. On Lucho, it's in the attacking phase of play. Bring that one back. Here's what Caleb had to say. Quote, it's a fair goal, 100%. Referee gets in the way. Referee fouls Acosta. And then the referee goes and looks at the television to bail himself out. I've never in my life seen anything like that ever. Continues, the fact that he's looking at VAR and trying to bail himself out, there should be massive ramifications for that. Caleb Porter also went on to say that basically his team doesn't get any respect. He likes video review. He thinks it's great. He's a huge proponent of it. He thinks calls are right, but this one is completely botched. All right. Uncle says via the pool reporter what we figured he would say, which I think watching back the replays, you'd expect him to say that Trapp commits a tripping foul against Acosta. It's missed by the referee crew. It starts the attacking phase, and the goal is off. We debated it last night on Matchday Central, so I'm curious right now your takes, Doyle and Bob. Excuse me, I almost called you Bobby. You're sitting in his chair.
You actually almost called me Bobby.
Yeah, you know, Bob.
Yeah. Didn't you call him Doyle?
Yeah, you know, hey. I'm getting older.
It's actually, when you're not here on Thursday, I actually just go by Doyle.
That's fine. It's good for your brand.
It is good for your brand. I was up till 3 a.m. watching Game of Thrones, so that's my only excuse here.
Oh, I haven't watched it yet. No spoilers.
No spoilers. You got it too? Yeah. Stayed up.
I don't know what to think of this play because I haven't watched instant replay yet.
Exactly.
I form all of my opinions about officiating from these two wonderful experts who I see every Monday.
That sounds possibly like trolling.
Morning.
Maybe a little bit of mockery.
Who appreciates so much the hard job that these officials do and how difficult the role is. Sorry, that's what Weeby has to do on Twitter every week.
I do. Hey, I don't want to
lambast everyone. I would say the goal should have stood. I would understand him wanting to go look at it because he physically has no idea what happened because it happened on top of him.
Yep.
So from that point of view, I have no problem going to review it, even if the VAR tells him, you don't need to.
Well, Kevin Terry Jr. obviously said there's a clear and obvious error here. You need to go take a look at it. Kevin Terry Jr. is the video assistant referee in this game.
I thought it was a foul. I didn't think it was clear and obvious.
So,
Like, if you look frame by frame, Will Trapp catches Lucho Acosta in the back of his left foot. Now, you then have to parse it apart. Like, okay, he's only kind of following him in that situation because Ted Uncle is there in the first
place. Which is Caleb Porter's point.
Which is Caleb Porter. And like, but like, there was a foul. You're supposed to act like, well, the ref is just, like, by the rules, by the book.
He's part of the field.
He's part of the field. He's a gust of wind. That's the, like, that's just.
I've never heard that one.
Ted Uncle is just in the wind.
So I get that. I didn't think it was clear and obvious, though.
Yeah, that's the challenge for me right here, because I agree with you. That's a foul to me, but I don't know. It's hard for me to understand how you could go back and reverse it when you're just not sure the angle's not perfect. It might be Ted Uncle hip checking him, but again, you're right. But if he's a part of the field, then Lucho Acosta has no complaint. Can't make a complaint.
Right.
It shouldn't be going to VAR. Like, a situation like that should not be going to VAR. In my opinion, the game is supposed to be continuous, and only if there's something, like, egregious, like a penalty decision, a handball, a goal.
You don't think this was
okay.
Egregious in the sense because Lucho goes
don't.
Down, and then it's Will Trapp in acres of space,
nope.
Makes one pass, and it's
I'm
a goal.
I'm just going to say,
I do not.
Bill Hamid should have made the save.
Whoa.
You can't get beat in your post like that.
So
that was brutal. We shouldn't even be having this conversation.
I understand what you're saying.
Make the save.
Like, Charlie,
yeah,
I understand
like,
what you're saying.
Don't take away from the game to make these decisions, especially when the ref boxed out a player and was part of the foul. Like, just take it on the ref on yourself and say, yeah, you know what? That's on me. Like, this is a goal, and it's on me. My bad.
There's been some complications with video review. I stand with Caleb. I think it's really good, and the process is still imperfect, and that needs to, you know, in stadium, I think there's work to do, because at Red Bull Arena, I had no idea what was being looked at or going on at any point during
the
game.
But you were looking at planes.
I was mostly, you're right. We were pointing at we now know where the sky is. So that's a really big learning point. But I think the clear and obvious side is confusing. Not just for people at home or people like us who watch it and talk about it, but I think kind of for the referees too. There's some sort of gray area where like the intent, how it's being called and the execution, it's confusing.
But one of the things everyone complained about when this started was, well, you can't take the human element out. Boom. You've still got human element. There's still mistakes, and
it takes longer.
It's still personal. It just takes a little bit longer, and you got to watch replays while it happens. So everyone complained at the start about how you're going to take away the human element of a referee controlling a game, deciding a game, making mistakes, blah, blah, blah. And then you go and
or just
still
make
there.
It, maybe even not mistakes, just making calls through his lens.
Yeah.
As opposed to what, you know.
But I think we all agree overall it's helped because there are super obvious egregious mistakes that just get fixed.
They shouldn't even have to go to VAR because
right.
They should have been like seen by the ref in the first place. But it's going to have to go to like the NFL kind of situation where you're like, all right, guys, everyone in the stadium, we're going to have to look at this play for this. And then the referee goes and does his
thing.
Charlie, I just want to say, Charlie's on the verge of saying something mean for the first time in like the 3 years that I've known you. You're like right
I
at the edge.
I say just put it on the, don't even need to tell me. Just put it on the board. Tell me what you're reviewing. Offside.
But they are testing microphones for referees to do that.
Okay.
To be able to tell you notify afterwards.
Any
occurs.
Sort of communication, I think it would be a positive thing. I think it's been good so far. There are always going to be moments like this where people are upset. Caleb Porter also did a very good job of distracting us with shiny things and incendiary quotes from the fact that the Crew have lost 5 in a row. So that was also a very well done piece of public relations by Caleb Porter.
Oh, yeah.
Us against the world.
How do you is there a fix here? We keep saying they need more. I was like, they need more from Pedro Santos this weekend. When he scores a goal, it gets taken off the board.
What about Zardes?
I mean, yeah,
we know
getting the service.
Yeah,
right. But that's my point is Greg Berhalter in his system, Zardes was always getting opportunities and service. And then everyone said, oh, Caleb Porter is going to stick with the system. It's going to be easy, smooth transition. And now we're seeing what happens when you don't have Berhalter basically coaching the side to tell them, all right, guys, this is how we have to play. This is how we have to get Zardes the ball. And because Zardes is not a player who's going to just come back, check in half field, turn, and run at guys and score goals. No, he needs to have that service to get in the box, make those near post runs, get at the penalty spot, get the service. That's not happening.
Is it as simple
as... Wasn't this always going to happen? Because this isn't a new coach with a new group. It's a new coach with the same group.
So the first month I think everybody felt like, oh, he's not changing much.
Right.
It's
letting it roll.
It's letting it roll. And if you look at it in the past month and a half now, it's changed.
But he has to.
I'm not sure Valenzuela or Offal. Year.
Doesn't that ultimately change?
For sure. And like, and if you want to contextualize it, we've been talking about the Red Bulls off like bad start. Well, no Kamar Lawrence, no Tyler Adams, BWP kind of, you know, so like the personnel plays a big factor in a lot of this, and not having those two guys who are essentially DP caliber fullbacks and were so integral to everything that the crew did the last, you know, last year and then the last five, if you want to look at how they played. But they're not playing like that at all. Like, Will Trapp is not dropping between the center backs to split them and hit those long diagonals anymore. They're changing how they're playing from the back. And maybe that is like, okay, we don't have Harrison Offal, we can't do this. And they're just trying to find a new path forward. But they haven't. They are one of the lowest scoring teams in the league, and so far it looks like that's not going to change.
Just the idea, though, that Caleb Porter, a different coach with a different background, different skill sets and different soccer philosophy, is going to step in and have the ability at a high level to coach someone else's system without them there over the course of a year or two seems unrealistic.
So you're saying it was always going
to
change?
It had to.
Yeah,
well, look at De Boer and Tata Martino. Same thing. Coach comes in, essentially the same squad. I mean, you lose Almiron, but you bring in the reigning South American Player of the Year, and guys look lost. For the most part of the season until, you know, very late, but it's the same thing.
And if De Boer or Caleb, their ideas are not the same ideas as the other coach. So then if they try to do it, it's not going to be at the same level as what it was. So now you're probably worse off in the end anyway. At some point you have to transition. The problem is, it is the group Greg Berhalter built, so it's built for his system.
Correct.
So the question for Caleb Porter is, how does he get the best out of them in what he wants to do, or how does he move pieces around to make it fit what he's good at and what he's able to bring?
You could also maybe say that Greg Berhalter left at the back end of the window. Would that be fair?
Yeah, Pipa, where he's at.
With Miram, with Santos. I mean, Artur and Trapp are young. You would have thought Valenzuela and Artur, or an Offal, excuse me, had a couple more. Mensah was coming into his own.
Stefan's about to leave.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, so it's a transition time for the crew. We knew that. FC Cincinnati have scored as many goals from the run of play in the last month and a half as this panel has.
Hey, I've been scoring at home. I have a fake goal.
You've been banging them in, huh? You've been putting them on frame,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, the twins are putting it in, too.
Good. I know how much everyone out there loves this. I scored the greatest goal of my life in co-ed soccer on Monday last
week. Oh, my gosh.
I swear. Like, dipping shot from midfield over the goalie's head.
Of course.
That came after a rainbow.
He also
got a yellow card that game for kicking the ball away petulantly, and then almost got sent off on Tuesday night for basically starting a fight.
Wow.
I was in the right on Tuesday, and on Monday, you got to know how to manage the moment.
People don't understand what a psychopath David Goss is.
San Jose won.
Until you play pickup with Bobby, and then you realize how I'm a miniature compared to him.
We actually should do like a full video.
And let's go and win, is what Bobby says after you score one goal in 4v4.
He has trigger words for the press. Like, Bobby, I'm hungover.
And Zoom.
Yeah, and Zoom.
See, I'm afraid to get in these type of games, guys, because
can you stick around for an extra day?
If I get, like, I hit my temper with someone coming in with a cheap shot, or, you know, it's going to get
so
ugly.
That's the thing, is I'm the same, though. I don't come in on cheap shots. I get mad at people for being stupid.
Right.
That's the only word.
Big difference. As we were saying, San Jose won 1-0 against FC Cincinnati. Then Fernando Adi, after the game, he kind of went in. Quote.
Wait. Go we got to contextualize it with Alan Koch's quotes first. There were two sets of quotes that came out of this game, and Alan Koch had been getting a little bit of stick for playing ultra defensively in terms of his lineup and tactical choices, specifically playing three defensive midfielders. And he played three defensive midfielders from the start in this game and kept three defensive midfielders in there even after they were down a goal and up a man. Like, at some point you have to make an attacking sub. And he was asked about that after the game, and he said, let's not get caught up in where you typecast a player in terms of playing. We all know, and I'm very aware, we have a lot of defensive midfield players, but we're not going out and playing with everybody as defensive midfielders. Obviously, we're moving players around and playing them in attack-minded positions.
So there's
enter Fernando Adi.
Here comes Fernando
stage
Adi.
Right, he pursued by a bear.
Don't know if he saw that or not. Fernando Adi said this to the Cincinnati Inquirer. Quote, we just need to have an identity. We don't have an identity
yet. You chose the wrong quote.
I was going there. I'm going to get there. We have quality players. Good players enough, says Adi. Obviously, we're playing a lot of players out of position, and this is something we need to identify. Well, it's been identified now. We can't play guys out of position and expect them to be excellent in those positions where they don't play. Oh, here's the other part of it. We're a new team and a bunch of new players, but we changed formation, and, you know, it's no good. We just have to have an identity, and that's what is missing right now.
And that's probably being polite for Adi. You know, he's out there. Yeah. Like,
well, he says that he's told Alan Koch all of these things.
Yeah, but, I mean, he's being polite in what he's
saying.
In the
public sphere, he said it in a different way, I would guess, than he might have in the private sphere. Things are not going too well. Can you say?
We also
is
should
there?
Caveat all of that with Fernando Adi was suspended for like the last month.
Sure.
So he wasn't super helpful to the whole situation.
Yeah, that's, that's also
that's
a great
on
point.
Him.
Yeah, he wasn't around for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hard to play him in position.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But we talked about it on last week. Oh, you guys weren't here, so you guys don't even know. But this was the whole conversation was just identity. And like Bobby was chafing at the idea that the roster wasn't good enough to make the playoffs. And honestly, when you look at the players on the field and the players on the roster, yeah, you could get an MLS playoff appearance out of those players in Major League Soccer in 2019. But
I'm with Doyle here. He's shaking his head. I'm not sure about that.
I disagree
you
with
can
you.
Can definitely get better than this.
Yeah.
You can definitely get
they've
better
scored
than
one
this.
Goal. They've scored one goal in 11 hours
you,
on the soccer
They can be
field.
Competitive.
Yeah.
They can be competitive with this team.
And by the
I don't
way,
know about playoff, but to go
seven teams make the playoffs.
To go back to your point, competitive in the East probably means that you're at least sniffing around.
Yeah.
You
I mean,
know, like,
you have a fair point with that.
Yeah.
But to have, quote unquote, eight defensive midfielders on a team and I'm going to put one of them at up top and put one of them on the wing, like that's not going to help your team at all. When you have Kenny Safe as your striker in certain games, how is that helping your team? Like, so as a former player and a guy that has relationships with players on that team, I can understand the frustration coming out of that franchise because a lot of the players are upset. They want to be put in a position to succeed, and you're not going to be put in a position to succeed if you have defenders or defensive-minded players in attacking roles, because you know at the end of the day, when you're on a break or you're trying to go get that goal, that ball is going to come backwards because defensive players tend to play backwards because they want to play that safe ball. They're not used to running at guys or creating chances. That's not what they do. So when you're putting players out there as a striker, how the hell am I going to get service? I'm upset. This is Adi showing, hey, I'm frustrated. And obviously, he's been gone. He hasn't been there. But you could say the same for Kakuta Mane. You could say the same for Darren Maddox. They're not getting service. They're not being put in a position to go out there and score goals and be this team be the players that the team needs them to be.
Kenny Safe says he doesn't know if he'll stick around. He is on loan. The quote here from him, if I don't have a good feeling, I'm not staying. If I do have a good feeling, I'll stay. I enjoy that quote from Kenny Safe. It sounds like he does not have a good feeling.
At the moment, that's
no,
for
not
sure.
Not right now. More from week 10 here. Minnesota and Seattle played a pretty darn good 1-1 draw at Allianz Field. I really enjoyed watching this one. It is not a good sign for Minnesota, or at least not a super positive one, that in four home games of the new venue, they've just got one win. Three draws in that time, but the defense definitely looks better. Aiko Parra with a nice header on this one. Christian Roldan with the banger. Big question for the Sounders. Which was the bigger loss, Raul Ruiz Diaz or Gustav Svensson? We're going to find that one out because Svensson's turned out to be a much bigger piece than a lot of people
Although,
expected.
Ruiz Diaz was on the bench for this one?
He came on.
Came on. So.
It changes for them. Yeah, it changes things for them. But that midfield mix, as Roldan said on this very show, was extremely good with Svensson in there. I want to talk Francisco Calvo.
Can we just real quick, Roldan's hit?
Yeah, go for it. Yeah, wax poetic.
No, it gets me pumped up. I think I said on the show, if he played shortstop or like free safety on a team, I think he could make it. Like, he's just has a battle mentality. He's got good technique. He covers a ton of ground, and he figures everything out. He's played, what, four positions now at the pro level, and he's figured it out at all those positions.
At least four, yeah.
And so that's the type of guy he is, and I think part of when we'll talk about Svensson over the next few weeks, if he's out and stuff, is I think Roldan will once again figure something out of just how to be at his best based on the situation around him. But when you're that type of player and you have clean technique and you have good stamina, so you're never like dragging around the field, ball pops out, so you get to drill one.
Yeah, and he's like, sweet. Hey, I probably wasn't even going to be playing this game.
Yeah.
Nice little peel, nice little hit.
I'm a Roldan fan. I'm in.
Show Ozzy what's
I'm a big fan of him as well because of his character. He's a great kid. He's always looking to learn. He's humble. Those are the guys you want to play with.
Makes a great flower box. Yeah, really, really like Christian Roldan, too. Francisco Calvo was wearing the captain's armband when I was in Minnesota for the home opener. He is not wearing a Loons jersey anymore because they flipped him to the Chicago Fire for $400K in total allocation money. They also get a sell-on if they happen to move him on here down the line. I won't go into the breakdowns here, but it's 150 in 2019 and 150 in 2020, and that math only goes up to 300, so I don't know where I got those figures. It's 400 overall. That's what you need to know here. Where are the Fire going to play him? Why did this happen? I mean, I get why it happened.
He's not a natural left back in a back four, but he's still better than anybody that they have at that spot. But I think, and you know, credit to our friend Paul Tenorio for tweeting this as well, and Paul has, I think, good sources within the Fire that it's probably going to end up being a back five. It's probably going to end up being like a 5-3-2 or a, you know, 5-4-1 type of thing. And Calvo's going to play as a left center back, which is the position that he's been playing primarily for Costa Rica over the years. And he's been much better for Costa Rica than he ever was for Minnesota United.
So he's got to like it. It's a little bit of a... It's a fresh start for him.
$400,000 is not a lot of allocation money at this point. It's not. If you get a guy who, you know, has been a starter for a team that... Like, Costa Rica is a top 20 national team in the world. And maybe Calvo is the type of guy who... The armband weighed a little bit too much for him. You know, where if he had to be the leader, he couldn't quite do that. And we saw it in his last appearance with the Loons, where he got that totally unnecessary red card. But now he's not the leader. Bastian Schweinsteiger is the leader. Dax McCarty is the leader. So he can just be a follower, and maybe that'll suit him. The talent's there.
He was bizarrely upset about playing left back, but wasn't good at center back. And you got in this weird spot where it's like you're unhappy when you're playing better, and you're happy when you're not playing as well. So I think the five-man back line fits him and it fits the team because it eliminates some of the individual issues for players who struggle defensively because you just have more numbers back there. And if you have someone of the intelligence of Schweinsteiger to really move the pieces around, like the quarterback sitting in the middle of all of that, I think it makes everyone's role easier. It also might fit Frankowski or one of those guys in as wingbacks rather than fullbacks.
Raheem
as well. And then you can find a role for Katai or Gaetan as that second guy in a 5-3-2 off of Nikolic and finding space. So it seems to fit everything. And like Doyle said, it's just pure talent at some point. Sometimes someone's better at soccer than someone else. And whether it's the right fit or not, if it's a good move, I'm pumped about this because there's Pedroso as well. Marquinhos Pedroso was quote unquote traded from DC from FC Dallas to DC.
It's quite MLS-y.
But just in general, I think there's a lot of players in Major League Soccer that are useful, that can be a good part of a roster, and they're just in the wrong place or they're behind someone.
Yep.
And rather than just sit on it because you're scared other teams are going to be good, move those pieces. As a fan, the league gets better. As a neutral, the league gets better. But we're talking about FC Cincinnati. How many teams in MLS need a defensive midfielder? You've got 8 of them. You can go out. Maybe you're not going to get as much bang for your buck as you wanted to or exactly what you spent on them, but you're going to get useful pieces and another team gets a player. Fine, whatever. That's not your problem. Your problem is to improve your roster, and there's moves like this out there in Major League Soccer. You went through 24 of them.
There's a lot. There's so many. And I'm not even going to get into it, but there are plenty.
May 7th is the close of this transfer window. You can make trades up to that point. By the way, Memo Ochoa and the Fire, there might be a connection there. He's free in the summer. It's been rumored for a long time.
I just
want to say demerits to Matt Doyle because I'm sitting at home on Saturday night. And I'm like, do I stay up for LAFC Chicago? And Doyle's out here tweeting about how it's going to be a goal fest and the Fire aren't playing any natural defenders.
I didn't say it was going to be a goal fest.
You really implied. You really implied.
I think you inferred.
Maybe a little bit of both. You pushed me over the edge, and then I had to sit through.
I came into the studio yesterday, and Weeby was like, I'm so heated. Doyle told me to stay up late because this is going to be an unbelievable game. Game of the year.
It was a pretty good game.
I'm tired.
Pretty good game.
It was exciting.
I had the TV out on my back porch watching
entertaining.
The game,
yeah,
so you could have come over and watched.
A good party over at Dave's house.
I lost my invitation, I guess.
Yeah,
no, yours is on the back of the TV you gave me for free. That's your representation at the event. You don't get to actually come as well.
We did not give winner status to the Timbers, but they absolutely should have got it. It just became official. Brian Fernandez signing from Necaxa. Huge, huge club record fee. We've been talking about him for a while. Also big for the Timbers. Three straight wins. They beat RSL via Sebastian Blanco and Diego Valeri goals. That Diego Valeri goal got him to 70 and 70. 70 goals, 70 assists in Major League Soccer. He's the ninth all-time to do it. Well, I already gave you the rundown. I was going to quiz you, but you have it in front of you. Landon Donovan.
You physically covered your own computer. All have a shared document open.
No, let me see.
Yeah, oh, boy. Landon Donovan, Steve Ralston, Kobe Jones, Preki, Dwayne DeRosario, Jason Christ, Jeff Cunningham, and Jaime Moreno. That is a who's who of MLS legends. Congratulations to Diego Valeri. Let's talk, though. Brian Fernandez. He's 24 years old. He's Argentine. He's had some bumps in his career.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Had a couple unintentional pun there.
Yeah.
He did have in 2015 a suspension for the use of cocaine. Moved on from that, had restarted his career. Then he is also suspended right now in Liga MX because he spit at some fans. It was his first red card ever in that instance. Still TBD whether that suspension will carry over. If it does, I believe he will miss two more games. The reporting by Sam Stachko at The Athletic is that he will be available for selection this week, and that could then potentially, depending on how they handle that suspension, be his first game that counts toward that. But this is a big fee. Mexico is saying, the reports on there, $10 to $12 million, which would put it up in like the top five all time for MLS. Jeff Carlisle says it's not at the $12 million range, but there's still some murkiness there. Primarily has played right wing this season in the Clausura, 12 goals. He's also played center striker. He can do both. He played mostly center striker in the Apertura. He's only been in Necaxa for a year. Mm-hmm. What a nice move for them. I mean, this is big money on the quick flip. He wasn't even there for a full year. This is a good signing that he can play both. It seems like this is the guy that the Timbers have been trying to get, a game-changing attacking player.
And they've been going after that all offseason long, and I get it. I still question whether that defense is going to be enough, because we know they danced on the knife's edge all throughout last year's playoffs. But so far, early in the season, they figured out ways to improve that, and they're still getting production out of Diego Valeri, out of Sebastian Blanco, and out of Jeremy Abobasi, who has, you know, two game winners in the previous 2 weeks. The question I have is, okay, does Fernandez come in and slot into that in like a 4-2-3-1? Because that would seem to be natural, because he's been much more productive as a right winger. Or do they use him as kind of a line running center forward up top, and Abobasi goes to the bench?
It also just gives you options. They just haven't been a team.
Yeah, it gives you options.
Yeah, you haven't been able to move pieces because you don't have a full complement of dangerous players. And it's a lot of money.
Dare you disrespect Lucas Milano like that?
Oh, my God.
He was the previous club record, by the way. $5 million. God.
Well, I mean, Fernandez should be twice as good.
But you bring this piece in, and it's like you've got a ticking time with Valeri. It's not forever, and Blanco's 30 or 31.
Yeah, he's on the outside.
So I like the investment in a guy at this age where he can help you maybe push while they're still playing well, and then carry the mantle as the star player once they're gone. Because he's 26 years old.
But Valeri only
24.
Just turned 33. 24.
Yeah,
like he's got a good couple years left.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. He's 33. He could definitely, the way he plays, it's not like a guy that depends on speed and athleticism.
Fair.
He's fleet on his feet. He's agile. It's his brain. It's his movement. And he's got a great first touch. So that's not going away.
He's got another option now in Brian Fernandez. Supposedly a lot of money here. And that's a big move for them. They also moved Daniel Guzman to Cruz C. 2019 international spot comes the other way. Sounds like it's probably
it's
to get
David
this one
Guzman,
done.
Right?
David, I don't know why I put Danielle in there.
Couldn't figure out who got traded reading this for a while, and then was like, that makes sense.
Yeah, it does make sense. Timbers also made another move. They've been out here. Gavin Wilkinson is shaken. They acquired, 175K in allocation for another international spot. So that must have been
spot, but then they got a good international one.
Yeah. Then there's some other MLS-y trades here. Marquinhos Pedroso did not get traded. No, he did not. Oh, but man. Dallas did acquire, or they acquired a bunch of allocation money here. This is confusing.
From DC United. So Marquinhos Pedroso was signed. He was signed originally using discretionary TAM. Yep. Discretionary TAM is not tradable, and it turns out players that you sign with discretionary TAM are thus not tradable. So that then, so he had to be waived, and there had to be a gentleman's agreement with the other clubs that they would not pick him off the waiver wire, which allowed DC to pick him up. In the process, DC sent their first round pick.
There you go. And they got 100K and GAM back. So two completely
so the trade was a draft pick trade.
Yeah, so the so DC sends the draft pick. DC or DC gets Marquinhos Pedroso, gets him and $100,000 of GAM. And the reason Dallas paid $100,000 of GAM is because they wanted the cap room. DC United now has Marquinhos Pedroso's entire salary hitting their books. Dallas don't have to absorb that, which is about, I think, $350,000.
And obviously more
very simple and straightforward trade.
Extremely clear there. LA Galaxy are out here flipping GAM for TAM as well. So they sent $225K in GAM for $325K in GAM with Minnesota. Then they did the same for $300K TAM with Columbus. They've been linked with Fabio Alvarez. He's a 26-year-old Argentine down at Atletico Tucumán right now. He's like a center midfield attacking player, could play on the wing. We'll see what happens. Dennis Closa says they do want to get an attacker over the line before this May 7th. That is Tuesday deadline. Dennis Closa also says, as everyone knows, it is imperative to trade GAM for TAM as we look to remain competitive in the global market. As everyone knows, Dennis.
I actually follow Tam on Instagram. Great follow. Seriously. Yeah, party. Like,
really?
Private jets, the whole thing, yacht parties.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Quality follow.
Champagne player.
Yeah.
Oh, you're saying? Okay.
Are we
mailbag
right?
Time, 401-206-0-MLS, extratimeatmlssoccer.com. Question for Charlie, just because I wanted to ask it. Your first choice. We have a 5v5 tournament. Let's just say we're putting it on at Brooklyn Bridge Park. We're going to kick you the entire time. You won't get mad, but your first choice will be who you can. It can only be somebody that you could actually call right now. You could pick up the phone and they would answer. Who would you take for your team?
And this is in their prime.
Yeah, in their prime. Not right now. Not like, you know.
Yeah. Stuart Holden.
Mm.
Picking up the phone, I'm calling Stu. I'm like, Stu, I need you on my 5v5 team because I know you defend. You will work hard for the team, and you love feeding the beast.
You're the beast.
I'm the beast.
Right.
And he's going to get joy out of scoring goals and celebrating.
Got you. So in 5v5,
do you throw Sellies
10
in?
Minutes.
Yeah. Anytime I score a goal, nice. I'm throwing a celebration. It could be 2v2. It doesn't matter.
What if you could only pick one person off this panel?
Off this panel? I haven't seen either of you play.
But you know in your heart. You're
going to pick Gus.
Nice.
Yeah, you definitely.
I would pick
Dave.
Me too.
Yeah,
Garrett here. Clearly been watching a little LA Clippers. If MLS had a super sub award like the NBA has a sixth man award, would Osinho be the front runner making such an impact off the bench? Who would be your front runner, and what would be like? What's the qualifications? Because I think you can't start a certain amount of games in the NBA.
I'm gonna say obviously Osinho, but I was thinking that we just like clone Osinho. We give him to every team in Major League Soccer, and we say once you're up two goals, you are contractually obligated to play your cloned Elsinho. You must play him, and he will go out and just snake people.
Snake fest.
Just snakes, chips from 2 yards away. Just, you know, all the give and goes on the edge of the box. When he does that, I'm like, follow him, bump him, do something. And he always gets the goal, always. Alan Gordon's gone, so you don't have Gordo anymore. I'm trying to think who else has made that impact.
Good super subs.
Dab God.
Pillow Feet. Oh, Dab God. Pillow Feet's not really around much.
They're all like 5-year-old refs.
You're talking about Adam John. He's in Phoenix.
Okay.
Yeah. He hasn't been in MLS in 2 years.
Oh, I still remember him very fondly. Jordan Hamilton has had a little bit of a run here this year.
Definitely. It's Elsinho.
He's not on that level, though.
Well, but I'm just saying he's had a run. He had a good run. Yeah, he had a good Minnesota gave him a
but
couple.
But he's been getting starts in there, too.
Yeah.
That's almost a bad
thing. I think
thing.
You have to come off the bench for more than half your game.
What about Chris Pontius?
Pontius is a starter now.
Yeah.
But was he?
No.
Could he still fall in that?
But that's the thing. When he was coming off the bench, he wasn't impacting the game. He's been much more impactful this year when he's been starting. I think we've seen that the last
I would game. Love to see one team that subs like a D mid in every time they win and that guy win it. And it's like, well, every time I come in, we win.
Lock it down.
Yeah. You got to be the guy that locks it down. Toronto Duck wants to know, quarter of the season gone, pick your favorite surprise player of the season so far.
Latif Blessing, the jitterbug who scored a bunch of goals, or not a bunch, a good number of goals in Kansas City between Open Cup and the league, but was like maybe a 9 when he got there. Then he was on the wing, but he was always around the box. He's like a 1v1 player. Now he's just like Mr. Tackle in the midfield.
He's like Kante.
Yeah, he's just covering ground, hitting people.
Literally, he just covers ground, breaks up plays, and then gets rid of it. There's no dribbling. There's no Latif blessing, taking guys 1v1. It's just take it and get it off your feet and just be ready for the next guy.
I think he should be on your 5v5 team. That team's going to celebrate. Latif and Charlie, it's almost too much.
Celebrations. I same team. I'm going with Atuesta, Eddie Atuesta. I didn't think much of him last year. I didn't think he was a good player, but this year he's really getting on the ball, controlling the tempo, finding the right passes, making the right decisions, being in the right spots on the field. I think he's made a huge jump from compared to last year.
I love the two of the three in that midfield are Marc-Anthony Kaye and Latif Blessing. Guys, you probably, like 2 years ago, nobody would have called that. Nobody. Who you guys got?
I got Edwin Cerrillo, the 18-year-old homegrown D-mid for FC Dallas. Nobody knew about him. I'm part of the soccer dark web of people who are like really into youth soccer in this country and follow every USSDA.
Oh, really?
Game.
Are you?
Yeah. Can you imagine
that? Didn't know.
How do I get to this dark web?
No, you don't want to be part of it. Shout out Joey from the Scuff Slack. But Edwin Cerrillo, we talked about him. No. we talked about him in preseason because he was starting to get minutes in preseason, and we were all going back and forth and Cerrillo, I guess he's going to earn himself.
Yeah, where's Cervania? That was
we were thinking Cerrillo's going to earn himself a North Texas contract, and then he gets the MLS contract, and we're like, oh, good for him. And then he's a starter for one of the better teams in the league, and he's like a write 'em in pen starter at this point. Like this past weekend, Lucha Gonzalez needed to take off one of his defensive midfielders. He took off Carlos Grezo, who's a 24-year-old Ecuadorian international World Cup veteran, and left Cerrillo on instead. This kid has probably played his way into the US U20 team for Todd Ramos. He's been really good.
Let's finish out with Texas. Eric in Fort Worth.
I wanted a surprise.
You wanted me to say?
Yeah, you don't.
No, I did. I just, when I'm hosting, Mentonaires up there.
Okay.
And Montero for Philly has been really good
like
as well. Eric in Fort Worth. He said, there's a lot of doubt around the Dynamo based on Elisa's probable impending move. Discussions are handicapping their chances based on that, but should include mention of a replacement acquisition as well. If Elise sells for $10-plus million and the team brings in $2-3 million players, we potentially get better, not worse. The Dynamo just picked up an international spot. Matt Jordan's been out of the country shopping. How do they get the most out of this?
Albert Elise is no easy... You can't find a replacement player just because you have the money. Like he's very, very dominant because of his pace, his speed, and his athleticism. It's not an easy player to replace.
And they gave him time to get settled, which you're going to have to give anybody time if you're bringing him in from outside, especially midseason.
And it's not just Albert Elise. Moro Manotas as
say
well.
Say it loud, man.
They might have two holes to fill, and they're gigantic, devastating holes because, we talked about the Union at the start of the show. They've had 11 different scorers. Dynamo have had 4. Manotas has 5 goals. Elise and Memo Rodriguez each have 4, and Tomas Martinez has 2. That's it. That's the sum total of their attack. If they sell these guys, and look, everybody's got a price. If they get a $10 million offer, I think you probably have to sell. They're going to have to scramble. I'm sure they have a whole list of targets. They're going to have to spend. But just spending it, as Charlie said, it doesn't guarantee you're going to get that type of player, that effective a player.
So we're talking about the future there for the Dynamo. The present is pretty good. 2.38 points per game. That leads Major League Soccer. 6 wins, 1 loss, 1 draw. Now, they've had 6 games at home of those 8. So, Dynamo fans, when you hear people saying, oh, and maybe not completely sold yet, that's why. It's because the front end of that schedule has been very, very friendly to the boys in orange so far. So, that's at Seattle, tough. Portland at home, tough. DC at home, tough. At Minnesota, home to Sporting. I mean, they're going to be tested.
Yeah.
It's a great start. It's a great start. Not past the finish line by any means just yet.
Did you want to read Tyler from Kentucky?
No, I was going to finish out on David from Macon, Georgia, not me, who wanted to talk about Weeby's excitement for LA Red Bulls. He said that matchup, but not the one you talked about, the first Beckham game, pulled him into the black hole of MLS where he feels once you get in, you can't get out. The first game was on Henry's Red Bulls versus Donovan and Beckham's Galaxy. No clue what the score was, but who cares? The game was beautiful. Henry taking LA to school, literally juggling down the sideline. Beckham hitting inch-perfect diagonals. Donovan setting them in stride. It was a thing of beauty. Here's to enjoying that game with your son, Cam, last Saturday.
First half, he was all about it. Like I said, a little bit more variable in the second half, but he's 18 months, so we'll get him into it. He was wearing his Red Bull jersey. Shout out to everybody who said hi at the game. I just also want to throw out that that rivalry also brought us Rafa Márquez versus Landon Donovan in the playoffs. So it delivers. It's a good one. All right, folks, that's it for us. Thanks to Charlie, Dave, Doyle. I'm Andrew. We'll see you on Thursday, everybody.